Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hello, welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison.
And it's a podcast where we ruin a horror movie just for you.
Just for each and every one of you. Hallie, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Again, I should have thought of something that's not the horrors to talk about.
I know. Well, the horrors persist, and that's...
The horrors persist. I will say, if you live in Los Angeles, I know it's not... It's a non-native plant, which I feel like they're trying to swap it out, which I totally understand. But because it's been so on and off cool and sort of wet, the star jasmine has been blooming for weeks. It's so good.
It's
it just makes...
So
you're just
good.
Walking down the street... And just like a cloud of perfume wafts towards you. It is heaven. I've talked about this before, but like it really does make life worth living. Does that make sense? You gotta stop and smell the flowers, literally.
I think it's one of the best natural smells that plants give off. Like there are plenty of, like I love lilac and lavender, but like that star jasmine is like one of the most, sorry, Riz just like jumped.
No.
Is one of the most like lovely smells to be wafted through.
For me, it's star jasmine and then orange blossom, because we have orange trees around. Because that also is like a very intense, sweet. It feels like a perfume. It's almost like too much. Oh, it's so good.
Ugh, they're so nice.
How's Riz doing?
Oh, he's good. He was just under the bed for a while and then realized I was doing something. And now it's like, how do I get involved? There he is. Hi, Riz. They're the little best friend.
Hi, baby.
Oh. Okay, well.
He's out of there.
Yeah, he's out of there.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm reading a great book.
Ooh, laid on.
I've been reading a lot of like nonfiction essay books, but like not necessarily memoir ones, just like more cultural critique and stuff. It's called Y2K. It's by Colette Shade, I believe. It's like a little far away from me. But it's just like these different essays on like how like the promise of what the Y2K is like 1997 to 2008. It's that era. It's like pre the year 2000 and then also through the financial crisis is like the era. And it's just how like that era was promised. It's very like kind of about millennials and it's very dark, but it's about like kind of the promise of like what the future was supposed to be and the things that were happening in the background that have caused us to not have that future. So it's like it's not an uplifting book, but there's like some interesting just like, you know, the connection between, you know, post-Cold War Soviet Russia and why every fashion magazine had like a 98-pound Slavic teen as like the main standard of beauty.
Okay.
And like how like those like it is just really interesting. It like taps into like nostalgia for like this woman is like almost exactly our age. So it's like her experience is super tied to the ones that I had. But then like she gives really good research and kind of context for why certain things were happening and why certain things didn't happen and the way things kind of unfolded. So it's just an interesting read that I am enjoying.
Okay, great. I've always got like five books going.
Have five books going.
Because you gotta listen based solely how you're feeling at the time.
Yeah.
But I was listening to a book that I feel like my job is making me become misanthropic. So I'm trying to mm-hmm. not just read nonfiction and horror. I'm trying to open my mind up. So I was listening to a book by Kai Cheng Tom. It's called Falling Back in Love with Being Human. And I would describe it as poetry, but I think sort of the pages that these are like love letters, like just sort of existence. The author, she's a Chinese Canadian transgender woman, and sort of like, how do you approach the world in a world that is so cruel? And what I was struggling with is, because like she is so tapped in, I have such a resentment. I can feel myself like resisting, like changing my like distance from humanity that I feel like is sort of like cropped up in me again, having to read the news every day. Yeah. But I think that's good. That means I should be listening to this because it's provoking this reaction to me. Even if the reaction is like, oh, brother, like, I don't know, sister. But I think that's good. And so I'm pursuing maybe things that are a little more earnest than I am comfortable with and enjoy. So I think that's a good venue for me to explore, if that makes sense.
I think that's great. Reading is important.
Reading is important. Well, if you could take anything from this episode, which again is about Final Destination 4, Final Destination, it's that reading is important. Also important, obeying your premonitions when you have them. That's right. Yes. We are continuing our Final Destination month leading up to Final Destination : Bloodlines, which I've yet to see, but I'm very excited about. So let's get it started. We are doing the fourth installment, which is not called Final Destination 4. It is called The Final Destination.
The Final Destination.
It is so bad that for a second it was. It was, in fact, the end of the franchise. This is the weakest film so far in a lengthy franchise. But again, I still enjoyed it. It just compared to the first three, you know what I mean? They're struggling to maybe come up with stuff.
I mean, it's a lot of things.
Yes. And I will say the best set piece in this film is in the third act. And so they really do pull it out. And that, of course, takes place at the mall. So I'm really glad that we ended up in the mall in this one. And then
I'm really excited to go to the mall.
We always like to have Allison watch the trailer. What do you think about the trailer to The Final Destination, Allison?
I mean, I feel like this is the maybe not. But like, I feel like every other one that we've done so far, like the inciting incident is like at like a pretty, like it's a lot of like a car accident, a plane crash. Like this is like being at a NASCAR race. Is
that
the
stock
inciting?
Car, like, but like a more local regional, but yeah, stock car race where things go completely awry.
But there are like those are locations of massive accidents more often, like often enough that it's like a thing. Mm. So I like it is like a thing where it's like I don't that stuff does happen. I mean, plane crashes happen and car crashes happen too. But it is like a thing where it's like you went there, you know that this kind of thing is a possibility. But maybe that's just me and my complete dislike for cars.
I guess maybe it's like for me, what I struggle with is like I don't care about cars, and there's a lot of cars. It's all centered around a car accident, which. To me, the logging truck was scary because I could see myself in it. The stock car, it's like, this is such a freak accident that it's almost like I couldn't really place myself like there, if that makes sense. Like, sure, there are wrecks and that's terrible and individual drivers die.
But I wouldn't
It wouldn't decimate the entire stadium in the way that, of course, must be done in order to fulfill the promise of the Final Destination film. It was written by Eric Bress, just to give the writer a shout out, and he also wrote Final Destination 2, which I really enjoyed. So, you know, who knows? And again, I still enjoyed this. It just was like compared to the other ones, which I found thrilling. We also take a baseline scary. Allison, how scary do you find the concept of going to a stock car race?
I mean, terrified. There's just nothing appealing about it to me. So I find it scary and unpleasant top to bottom. Like, sitting out in like aluminum bleachers on the like in the sun, like to watch cars go in a circle, it just is like with like the most exciting thing that could happen is a car accident. Like I don't,
that's true.
Like that's the thing. Like people go to them to see the car. Like I mean that's like a thing. I don't know. It's just not for me. I think like as I get older, like any major group event, like any sporting event, any concert, any, I'm just like, no, too much can happen. There's too many people there.
I have talked to people who have that experience with, like, you know, not wanting to go to like concerts and stuff. And I will say, and this is just because, like, I'll be totally honest. For me, I always want to be sitting down. Like, well, I just don't like being around people. I'm not afraid. I'm just so anti being surrounded by a crush of people. I wouldn't go for that reason.
Yeah. And also just like the long process of loading in and loading out of large stadiums, theaters, and other arenas is just not for me. Yeah. I don't know. But I think driving fast is scary to me, so I just don't know. Nothing about it is appealing.
One of the reasons that I think we have stock car racing as sort of our inciting tragedy is the director, David R. Ellis, was a stunt performer and sort of has that in his career. David R. Ellis was also director of Final Destination 2. Mm. So I know that he has it in him. We see his imprint on the franchise. This, perhaps I just was unmoved by sort of the tragedy of a stock car race. So again, he obviously is a talented director. He also did Snakes on a Plane, which I loved.
Oh, it's fun.
And again, perhaps him on being on a plane may have been more in his wheelhouse in terms of disasters. And then finally, Allison, would you like to guess the gist of the Final Destination?
Guess the twist.
Well, I did accidentally also watch the trailer for 5, which we're going to be doing shortly. And I can't remember. Was this the one that was like, the rules have changed?
Basically,
do the rules ever change?
That's a great question. And the answer is no. But I will say, while in the last couple movies, they are referring back to Flight 180.
Yes.
And I think this is an addition where our protagonist does it. We're sort of starting from scratch, which I did appreciate.
Yeah.
Like, I think like
it's
we
time.
Watch people sort of pick it up midstream. This is more we're starting, like we have no fucking idea what this is and how would you possibly be able to figure this out. And so I would say in the third one, we introduce the idea that there are photos of the tragedy that could reveal sort of the manner of someone's death, whether that helped them prevent it or not. Of course, please listen to the episode. This is more along the lines of just total chaos.
Okay.
Though there is now sort of like a little bit of a tip of the hand before each death, but not one that I think most you'd be really able to use. Where I think like the photos were like a concrete, okay, we're planning ahead. We could try to figure it out. This, I think our protagonists are really like shit out of luck. And I appreciate that because it's like, okay, that feels different than the last two of like, oh, they really have no fucking idea. Like they are really like just scrambling, which is also scarier. Like I feel like once the other ones, it's more fun once they have a handle on it. This is, we don't have a handle on it at all.
It's just
we
coming.
Have no fucking idea.
Anything.
It's just shock and horror.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I do appreciate that. Like they're like, we got to mix it up a little bit considering we've had a couple where they have, they're able to draw insight from the incidents. And this is just mayhem, Allison.
Okay. Well, that's fun. I mean, I'm going to guess that, you know, there's people that survive an event and then one by one they die in the order they were supposed to had they not left the event because of someone's premonition, and eventually there will be one person left.
Allison, it's like you've heard a number of these exact movies of this franchise before.
It's almost like there's a formula to them.
Hey guys, hope you've been enjoying Final Destination Month, and we've got one more Final Destination for you to arrive at. That's our live show, which will be Sunday, June 29th at our regular time of 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, and we are doing the latest and maybe not greatest, but in the top three of the Final Destination series. That's right, we are doing the brand new Final Destination Bloodlines.
Oh my God, I have been actively avoiding everything. There are so many memes being shared by our account in particular, which is making my life kind of hard. But I am so excited to hear about this one. Devin Saw was tweeting about it. I'm interested. So we'll have all the normal stuff. We'll have a drinking game. We'll have the chat. We'll have, you know, we'll have merch classic. And you can get your tickets at moment.co/ruined. That is moment.co/ruined. They're $10 if you want to join us. And if you're a $20 Patreon tier member, they'll be in your inbox sometime that day. If you have any issues, you can always message us through Patreon. So join us at moment.co/ruined for your tickets.
And please keep it spooky. let us begin ruining the final destination, final destination for Allison. As discussed, we find ourselves at a stock car race.
I mean, we would never find ourselves at one, but
we would never if you called me and asked, would you want to go see car racing? I would call your parents and be like, something has happened.
Something has been some kind of major brain event.
Right. Yeah. Some of her tooth work has dislodged and entered her brain. We have to take her into the ER.
Don't say that. What if that happens?
it won't happen before the end of the episode. And of course, McKinley Speedway. We found ourselves at McKinley High in Final Destination 3. So again, we're in the same general tri-state area, is what I would say.
Okay.
Allison, we meet a protagonist who's a boy this time. We're mixing it up. who, with his girlfriend Lori and their friends Hunt and Janet, excellent names in this movie, are finding their seats in the stands watching the race. Janet is not having it. Janet is the us of the group, where she's like, couldn't we have just gone to the movies? We have to fucking sit out here in the hot sun with all these fucking hillbillies.
That's the thing, the heat.
Hunt, as you said, is loving sort of like, if these guys are off by a millisecond, we're going to watch a fantastic crash. And he tells them they could be scraping these guys off the fence with a shovel. I don't want to see that either.
I don't want to see that.
And Lori, of course, like, you want to see a crash? And he's like, no, I come for the speed, the exhilaration, and I also want to see a crash. Nick, our protagonist, returns with beers and hot dogs, which I would go for that. Allison, when he sits down, he notices the wooden bleacher underneath them crack. And they tease him about it, like, oh boy, Nick, lay out the hot dogs. We're having fun. Hunt takes out his binoculars and he opens them. It's actually a flask. And we see there's a couple in front of them, Andy and Nadia. And Andy says, can my girlfriend use your binoculars? He's like, oh no, they're. And then Nadia just grabs them and takes a shot. We're all friends here.
Fun.
And McKinley Speedway before the disaster strikes.
Oh no.
Lori and Nick are very much in love. And Lori says, thanks for getting out of the house. I needed a study break. We see them kiss. Everything is right in the world. A cowboy with a gigantic cowboy hat sits down in front of Lori and she grumbles like, I can't see anything. And he turns and he hears her. He's like, oh, do you want me to move down? And she says, yes. Now he would probably fly into an insane rage.
Yes. Yeah. And then somebody would catch it and put it on TikTok. And then he'd be, I don't know, the mayor of a town
white racist would give him $1 million because America runs on dysregulation and racism. But in this is a movie fantasy of the world in 2009. So he tips his gigantic cowboy hat and moves down the bench. Janet's impressed. She's like, oh, I thought chivalry was dead. Allison, we see a scene that I can think this could only have happened before, I would say 2012, right?
Okay.
We see a mother is giving her sons to block, because it's very loud. So it's like if you have kids, you should have earplugs in. She's giving them like OB tampons, like cut in half to like stuff in their ears, but also is laughing at them. And I was like, oh, so you want them to go to, like, they'll be telling their therapist about this.
Yeah. Yeah. The person forcing them to do the thing that you're then making fun of them for, and others will join, like, bad mother.
Oh, it's also terrifically gendered in a very masculine space. Well, again, I'm not a mother. It just seems like you should just buy earplugs. Yeah. Again, call me crazy. Right.
You knew you were going, I assume.
Allison, we see a venue security guard. His name is George Lanter. He's walking up the aisles. And unfortunately, he walks past a couple that is just racist. The male racist is named Carter Daniels. And he says really loudly, so George, the security guard, can hear him, there goes the neighborhood, and then starts whistling Dixie.
Ugh.
Which makes me think of that meme where it's like, it's like a woman and she's like, the Confederate flag represents my history. Yeah, the history of taking a big fat L. And then she's like in a rebel outfit and puts like an L on her. And then she's just like she's like dabbing. It's very funny. We'll post it to social. Why explain a meme to you? And also, you've probably seen it.
Almost impossible.
So again, the Confederacy, the legacy of taking a big fat L. And that's the problem with white racists now. They're going to lose eventually. It's so fucking boring. We have to do this again. Anywho, George says to Carter and his racist wife, could you please get your foot out of the aisle? And of course, as soon as they move on, both he and his wife are like, can you believe a black person told me not to block the aisle? And he puts his feet back. Wow, really showed them, you guys.
Wow.
Because there's nothing more fucking pathetic, like no deeper loser than being a racist. And of course, he will get his, obviously, we're setting him up as someone whose death, is going to be pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
Allison, Nick, however, is starting to get that old, familiar Final Destination feeling. He sees the crack in the bench. He also sees a crack in the concrete above them. Ooh, concerning. And, of course, everything sort of shakes because like there's 12 cars whipping around at 100 miles per hour.
And I'm sure it was built a while ago
and never maintained. Exactly, yeah. This is like a local race car track. Nick started with these guests, hunt, like, how old is this place? Hunt says, well, bitch, I don't know, of course. Allison, we then see the beginning of an unfortunate turn of events. We see one of the cars stop at a pit crew. One of the pit crew members knocks over a container of motor oil, which spills out into the pit stop area. And we even see, like, one of the cars, like, skidding as it drives out. I just feel like they should have mop-up crews, right? Like, I could...
Yeah. Also, how do you clean up motor oil?
I don't know. Let us know in the comments.
Yes. If you know how to clean up motor oil spills, you tell us.
Use that Dawn soap. Well, that's how they get it off of ducks, right?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we see the screws on the fence, the safety fence between the raceway and the stands. The screws, of course, start to slowly unturn.
Yeah.
Then we see a breeze blow a paper over to Nick's feet. Allison, it's a memorial bulletin for all the drivers who have died at the raceway in crashes. We see in memory of our beloved drivers, Ed Bubba Block, 1999 to 2003. I was like, oh my God, he died at 4 years old. Oh no, that's how long he raced. Allison, Nick turns and sees a guy's shirt that says, life's a bitch. And then you die. Any questions? I would buy that shirt.
I mean, it's a good shirt.
Nick feels a breeze and he sort of jerks and he says to Laura, did you feel that? I felt like something touched me. She said, no, I didn't see anyone. Allison, as we're watching, we see cars keep pulling into the pit stop and one of the cars peels away with a screwdriver still jammed in the side of it. They're fixing something. The screwdriver falls onto the track. Of course, we know this portends catastrophe. A car drives over the screwdriver. It whips around and it punctures another car's tire. And Allison, that's all she wrote. The car flips over end to end.
Because they're going so fast that, like, yeah, like running over a bobby pin would even, like, change the course of what's happening with the car, let alone, like, puncturing a tire.
It immediately leaves the ground. Like, the tire explodes, and the car's driving at such a velocity, it starts to pinwheel, essentially.
It reminds me of that old meme of the lawnmower that goes up into the air. You know that one?
I'm trying to remember. Oh, is it like the push mower and it's flying?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, guys. This is a big remember those memes episode. Yeah,
remember memes from the early
aughts. We're 40. You know we're not young. Yeah. Grow up. Get a life. Allison, unfortunately, when the car flies off the track, one of its tires flies off and flies into the audience and decapitates Nadia, the girl who took a swig from Hunt's binocular flask. It's chaos from here on out. The car hits the track. It explodes into flames and everyone starts running for the exit because the other cars, again, this is a very finalization thing. And also movies where if you saw a car crash, everyone would slam on the brake. No. These cars keep going. Another car slams into the wreckage, flies over the fence and into the stand, crushing people, Allison. So now it's just absolute mayhem. The wooden bench they're sitting on shatters as people are running up the bench. And we see a jagged shard of wood just jutting up in the sky. And you know someone's going to fall right on it.
Yeah.
The racist couple are cut in half by flying debris. Okay.
Nice.
The tampon earplug mom is crushed by a flying engine block. Andy, the boyfriend of Nadia, the woman who was just decapitated, he holds her decapitated body, stunned. And when he gets up and he tries to run, he trips and he falls backward onto the gigantic shard of wooden bench. And it stabs him through the back of his skull and emerges through his mouth. Classic Final Destination moment.
That's horrific.
Allison, another car explodes and flies off the track. The cowboy with the big hat is crushed against a pillar. And he dies in the stands because of this car flying, which again, I'm like, it's been a couple minutes. This car probably could have stopped. It doesn't matter. This car has flown into the stands, slammed to the pillar. The concrete starts to crack. So the entire stadium destabilizes and giant chunks of concrete start falling and smushing people. including Hunt and Janet, leaving Nick and Lori screaming, trying to get to the exit. The exits are, of course, full of people. Like, it's just like people are crushing a throng. You can't run through the exits. And a gigantic piece of concrete falls, pinning this screaming mass of people basically in the exit. So they cannot get out that way. And the falling concrete separates Nick from Lori and George, the security guard. Nick reaches for Lori and screams, "Come on." But it's too late. She and George are consumed by yet another stock car explosion.
Okay.
And Nick is hurtled backwards, where he dies skewered on a metal pole, which juts through his chest. You hate to see it. Allison, Nick comes to. It was, of course, a vision, a premonition of the future. We are back to Hunt taking out his binocular flask. Nadia takes a sip. The cowboy sits in front of them. The mom is putting tampons in her kid's ears. Nick's watching all of this. Nick sees these things happen in reality, and Lori notices him freaking out. Allison, the racist, starts whistling Dixie. It's all happening just as Nick saw. He points to car 6, and the way that the design is, it says 666. He says, "That car is going to crash. We have to get out of here." He starts screaming. And Nick, I think, like so many of our protagonists, is a good person. He's telling everyone around them, "We have to get out. Something horrible. There's about to be a disaster." So he's shouting to everyone in the section. Hunt grabs him. Nick ends up falling on Andy and Nadia. And Andy, everyone's kind of drunk. Obviously, it's the middle of the day. Everyone's had like 8 beers. He's like, "I'm going to fucking kick your ass," thinking that he's trying to start a fight or that he's like freaking out. This then activates the racists, who are, of course, constantly wanting a fight because that's all they have.
That's and George, what they like.
They love it. That's the core of the identity. And George, security guard, kicks all of them out except the racist wife. She stays because she wasn't involved in the fight. And the racist is like, "Just stay here. Watch the rest of the race." And George hauls all of them out to the parking lot. Nick tries to tell George there's about to be a crash. Allison, much like in Final Destination 3 with the roller coaster, by the time they get to the parking lot and Nick gets a full sentence out, the crash has already begun.
Yeah.
We see the racist try to run back into the stadium saying, "My wife is there," but George holds him back, which of course, obviously, Carter the racist, he loves that, but also it's screaming, it's explosions, like you can't run back in there, it's already over. Nick is trying to tell them, "I just saw this, I just had a vision," and Nadia screams, "Have you all lost your fucking minds?" Allison, a tire flies from over the stadium and decapitates Nadia in the parking lot.
Yeah.
So even though she moved, it didn't spare her. She was spared maybe 30 seconds of her life.
Okay.
And we see her twitching, blown apart body, and her scalp has flown off halfway to the lemonade stand. Title card, The Final Destination. So let me just say, this movie was shot for 3D. And so the title sequences are very funny. And there's some badly done CGI that is obviously because it's 3D. But it's forgivable because of that. And the credit sequence is a very fun 3D x-ray sequence of all the deaths from the last couple movies. Somebody's like rushed down a human spine and it turns into the roller coaster. So I was like, what a fun way to recap. You've seen the movies, you know what's happening.
Here's some of the deaths you've seen. Yeah,
very clever, great use of the credit sequence. Allison, the gang goes to what I would describe as the worst coffee shop in the world. It's obviously some set, but it's kind of like, it has like red walls and that like funky, '90s coffee vibe.
Yes.
But it's just obviously like, we need it to look like a coffee shop. And it looks like a parody of Central Perk, where Friends was. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Needless to say, the gang is all having a coffee and sitting in dead silence, having just escaped this tragedy. Allison, we see carved on their table when Nick goes down the words, "It's coming." And so they're trying to talk to him like, "Okay, so how did you know that was going to happen?" Jen's like, "Was it like a dream? Like, why did that happen? How could you have seen that?"
Right.
Hunt, of course, he's our callous, practicalist. He says, "Who cares? We survived. Mm-hmm. If we lived," he got the message, "if we lived, we deserved it." There's a TV on in the coffee shop, which I hate. And he points to the TV
at a coffee shop. Jesus.
Yeah, come on now.
No.
But again, it's for the plot. We see a news alert. The death toll from the McKinley Raceway disaster is 52 people and climbing. They believe there are more survivors and more casualties stuck under the rubble because the entire stadium collapsed, right?
Right.
Which is also fucking horrifying to think about. You know,
it's the initial, I can't think about it too hard or I'll never go to anything again.
Allison, there's going to be a memorial at the raceway. And Lori says we should go, pay our respects. But Janet can't say, I'm not fucking going back there. We barely survived. We're going to go back there. And Hunt says, look, these people didn't have a Dr. Xavier to warn them to get out of the way. These people didn't have a lucky coin like me. He has his lucky coin. It's like, your lucky coin did nothing, but okay. He offers it to Janet and he says, kiss the coin, babe. You could pick heads or tails, but you know I like head. Janet pushes his hand away, disgusted, and says, I can't believe I went out with you. Okay, so they're broken up.
Okay. This would either, you'd either like immediately get married or split up after something this like.
Exactly.
Horrific.
Hunt says, I really can't believe we were so lucky, and flips the coin. Nick grabs the coin and he says, something saved us. Let's be thankful and make the most of it. And he slams the coins down. Tails. Nick and Lori end up going to the memorial that evening. Obviously, there's dozens of people. We see bouquets, photos, handwritten notes. So many people have died. We see Andy there, his tears streaming down his face as he looks at a photo of his girlfriend, Nadia. Who was decapitated. When Nick and Lori turned eventually to leave, they're stopped by the tampon earplug mom, whose name is Samantha Lane. And she is credited on Amazon Prime as Samantha Lane - MILF and her husband, Mr. MILF. And Samantha tells Nick, you're a hero. If you hadn't worn our section, me and my family wouldn't have left with our sons and we'd be dead. He's like, I'm not a hero. I'm so glad you guys survived. But like, I don't know what that was either. And of course, Mr. Mill says like, well, how did you know that was going to happen? And Nick has to admit, I have no idea. So again, I do appreciate that. It's like, I don't know. Please, I have no information for you people.
Yeah. Not instantly being like, I guess I can see the future.
Exactly. George, the security guard, introduces himself next. He, of course, then starts to like, well, how do you know? Allison, Carter the racist, bursts in. And he immediately tells George, you killed my wife. Dude, a car killed your wife.
Yeah.
If you want to get technical. George merely held you back from what would have been your inevitable death. Like, we know that from the premonition. Like, had you been in there, you would be dead. You'd be crushed. So George did what he had to do in an emergency. But of course, he's like, I was going to go back in there and save her. You stopped me. And George says, I'm sorry. And I'm very sorry for your loss. Carter turns to him and in front of everyone says, well, no one lives forever. N word. But he actually says it. Nick says, well, there's no need for that. And Carter's like, back off, you fucking freak. George says, please, it's time for you to leave, sir. And Carter the racist turns to him and says, your time is coming, chocolate. Again, we know we're about to watch his disgusting death here in a second.
I hope it's bad.
Allison, Nick goes to sleep, and when he sleeps, he has other visions, right? Which we've had in the other movies, but in this case, they are like terribly done 3D visions that are done for the 3D viewers in the theater, right? And we're seeing different flashes of different items, right? So similar to the photographs, we are being given clues, but they are not contextualizable at all. So Nick has to be like, what do these things mean? Allison, we see a red door, a horseshoe, a wildcat roaring, and a wrecking ball swinging. He wakes up. He and Lori live together. I think they're supposed to be like in their 20s, ambiguous 20s. So like 24, 25, they have jobs. They don't live at home anymore. They're out of school, but kind of they don't have anything to do other than be young and go to the raceway. She says, I'm sure it was just a dream. Go back to bed. Wrong again, Lori. And when he does, the wind blows through their bedroom, knocking a photo of them off their nightstand and an X-Acto knife, which they had apparently on the bedside table, which you shouldn't have.
Why would that be there?
And falls point down, stabbing Lori's photo through the eye. Allison, that night, Carter the racist, obviously he's drunk. We see him drive his tow truck, which is, of course, Wildcat Towing. And he parks outside George, the security guard's house. I'm like, oh, he's going to hate crime, this guy. Oh, great.
Great.
We also see him sideswipe a parked car and not stop in case we don't get what a piece of shit he is.
Yeah, it's like this is a whole vibe.
Inside, we see George reading on his sofa. His phone rings. It's his mother. Obviously, she's freaked out by everything. He puts down his book and we see it's a book from Alcoholics Anonymous. So he's really trying not to drink after this incident.
How?
Carter is in his truck. He's pounding through a six-pack of Heist Pale Ale, which, of course, is the fictional beer that exists in the Final Destination universe, which I love. And he finishes, I think, his fourth beer, and he says, time's up. And he's not referring to the Me Too situation. He means time's up in terms of the insane thing he's about to do. Allison, Carter puts on gloves and a ski mask. He takes out a cross because he's going to put it on George's lawn and set it on fire, KKK style.
Oh, okay.
And that's the level of racist we're dealing with here.
That is a, that's a choice.
If you are building a cross to burn anywhere, you are a void. Like, you're a void of a person.
Yes.
You've given up anything that makes you human. A human being.
Yep.
And unfortunately, you're introducing a lot of different elements like fire into your life in the exact moment that had he known, maybe he would have thought differently about it.
Sure.
But again, probably not. Allison, without realizing it, when he pulls the cross out of the truck bed, he activates, there's like a little wrecking ball on a chain, which falls to the ground, and we see the chain pooling after it. But he's so obsessed, he's like, I have to be so racist right now, I'm not even going to notice it. We then see there's a horseshoe dangling from his rear view mirror, another image we saw in Nick's premonition dream. And we see the wind blow through the cab. That damn wind in this movie.
The wind.
The horseshoe charm falls, turns on the radio to the song Why Can't We Be Friends by War. Okay. A little of nose, I'll allow it.
Yeah.
It knocks the two remaining beers onto the gas pedal, and the truck starts slowly driving down the street.
Wow.
Carter notices this, obviously. He tries to run after it. Allison, his ankle gets wrapped in the chain.
A pool of chain is almost always a death sentence.
Exactly. In these movies and in general.
Yes. Stay away from pools of chain and rope.
The chain wraps around his ankle and starts dragging him down the street. And unfortunately, the chain starts sparking on the road. These sparks travel up the chain to the truck. The truck's gas tank ignites. And Carter the racist dies screaming and on fire as the truck explodes. And so this is all happening. George literally opens his front door because he's here. He hears Carter screaming.
Yeah, and there's like an explosion.
Down the street. He opens the door to see the explosion, which would be insane. And we see Carter's decapitated, burnt head fall out of the sky at George's feet.
Boy.
In the morning, Janet calls Lori and says, turn on Channel 7 right now. Also, the interiors look like the movie The Room. That's what I realized it's giving. Because like this came out, this is shot in 2009. It came out in 2009, but it looks like 1999, but done for The Room.
Yeah,
does that make sense? Like every wall. Like a dark purple.
Yes.
There's like that metal, like black metal bed frames. It looks so out of place, or looks so out of like, you know, time. Also, of course, in the morning, Janet calls Lori and says, turn on Channel 7. Remember that redneck from the racetrack? He's dead. Lori calls Nick in and they see George's front door, the red room of Nick's dream.
Okay.
He tells Lori, I saw that door before. I think my dreams, I'm having other premonitions.
While he was, it all happened the night, like he's having the dream the same night that this is happening.
Yeah, so that's the thing is like, these dreams.
It's not super helpful.
There's nothing, I mean, like, even if there was a narrative, it seems like we're cutting it pretty close, right? And there will be moments where they start to like try to race to prevent something from happening. But that first one, I don't think, he was asleep. Like even, he wasn't awake to see it. This second vision, he is awake. So again, it does beg the question, is like the universe is trying to use him to stop this, because
allegedly
because in the other movies, like they're not, is the whatever this is happening is not necessarily giving them this level of warning, even though it is of course like disembodied, like it's, isolated images. So it's like the universe both wants him to know and see these things, but also not kind of not give him enough time in most cases. But of course, by the time we get to the third act, he will have started to piece things together in a way that he's going to be on the scene and try to prevent a death. Will he be able to? Well, we'll find out. In this vision he's having right now, we see a falling pair of scissors, a metal tool, a cigarette, and an eye. And then, unfortunately, Allison, we see a blade.
An eye, like an eyeball?
An eyeball.
Like a
human eye. A blade.
All right, well, not great.
And then a dark red, open, vacant eye socket. And suddenly Nick is back. And but what does it mean? And Nick tells Lori, I think that dream last night was a vision. I saw that door. It's like I saw clues for how someone was going to die. And I think I just saw another one. Allison, what would you do?
What would you do?
I mean, this is when, like, I'm like, all right, let's gather everybody from, like, you know, things are going to happen to the people who survived. Like, are they that aware of what's going on yet?
Not yet.
So it's just like, I'm having a premonition and then, like, a thing happens. But it's not like,
yeah, and
they're not like, because we survived the NASCAR yes. thing, we are now getting picked off one by, they don't know yet that yet.
And that's
See, that's like, what's hard is I do know that.
Exactly. And I think, like, I liked in Final Destination 3 that, like, you know, they're able to sort of pick up, like, oh, it's tied to Flight 180.
Right.
But this is like, we're starting from scratch. And I'm going to say, I do think the performances in this were good. I thought that they're really grounding it. It's obviously 2009, so there's a lot of like, what can I do? But I was convinced, and I am genuinely, you know, place myself in their shoes, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Bobby Campo plays Nick in this. I thought he did a great job. He's doing the best he can. But unfortunately, Allison, I think what I would do is just keep talking to Lori. I think Lori, having a partner involved, you know, you're sharing your lives and together maybe try to piece together a plan around them, or at least like maybe writing it down, calling Hunt and Janet, like spreading the news, maybe like that would be the only thing I could think of, because they don't
and
know
like telling
yet.
People what image, so it's like, all right, eyes stabbing, like be like, okay, just stay away from stuff, like you know, just like giving people the heads up of like, this is what I'm imagining, I don't know what it means, but
exactly
like, why don't we all try and stay away from the things that, you know, anything that kind of resembles what these premonitions are, because clearly something is happening. Summer is a time for doing things that are actually fun, right? Like going to the beach, having picnics, taking a walk around and sweating a lot, sitting inside the air conditioning and watching television. From home improvements to self-care, just having some fun in the sun is really what summer's all about. And the last thing that I personally want to do is spend more time at the grocery store or more time in the kitchen.
Listen, during the winter, I barely want to cook, so you can only imagine during the summer, I need things to be as quick and easy as humanly possible. Which you can, and you can make your summer both enjoyable and delicious by getting the number one meal kit as voted by USA Today readers, HelloFresh. HelloFresh makes it easier to fit quick home-cooked meals into your schedule every week by curating delicious recipes right to your door, like panko-crusted chimichurri burramundi or sun-dried tomato grilled cheese sandos, as well as over 100 seasonal snacks, sides, and treats. Snacks, sides, and treats, people. What more do you need?
Not much. And this summer, HelloFresh has made it even easier to enjoy delicious, healthy, and homemade quality meals with their new ready-made meals. These heat-and-go HelloFresh meals are chef-crafted, flavorful dishes ready in just 3 minutes, so you can dig right in and go do summer right.
You know me, my mouth is already watering looking at the Southwest-inspired chicken bowl and the stir-fried udon with pulled pork and veggie. There's also a creamy Alfredo truffle cavatappi pasta and an Indian-inspired chicken paired with turmeric rice. And the best part, these are all ready to eat after a quick spin in the microwave.
Every HelloFresh meal uses high-quality ingredients, including seasonal fresh produce, proteins that travel from the farm to your doorstep, and are simple with easy-to-follow recipe cards and simple heat-em-and-eat-em options. Choose from 60 recipes every week, including prep and bake and ready-made meals, plus 100 market items to add on for breakfast, lunch, and more.
Delivered right to your doorstep and so flexible you could pause or skip whenever you need. Now, we did HelloFresh, and I would say I enjoyed all of my meals, and that there was a private feeling of victory and satisfaction in just knowing that I had food in the house. And I don't know where you guys are at, but that's sometimes that's where I'm at, and that's where I'm at this summer.
Yes, I did like a burrito bowl, and it was also great because like you're cooking and I was like, oh, I have a little bit of extra cheese. I'll just like throw some cheese into this like already really good recipe, which was nice because it's just kind of customizable, but also super easy. I didn't have to go figure out how the hell you make a burrito bowl from scratch. So I really loved it. And then I was out the door and ready to enjoy my life instead of just like slaving away figuring out what to cook and how. So make your summer enjoyable and delicious by signing up for HelloFresh at HelloFresh.com/Ruined10FM and get 10 free meals with a free item for life.
For your human life, can you even imagine it? That's HelloFresh.com/Ruined10FM for 10 free meals and a free item in every box. HelloFresh.com/Ruined10FM. One per box with an active subscription. Free meals are applied as a discount on the first box. New subscribers only. Varies by plan. Nick tells Lori, ever since I left the racetrack, I feel like something is in the room with me. Like there's some sort of presence, which of course we've alluded to in the previous movies. And he says, what is wrong with me? Allison, we see Samantha Lane, local MILF, and her two rambunctious sons. She is dropping them off, giving them some money. Wait a second. We see Samantha Lane, local MILF, and her sons arrive at a hair salon. Her two boys are whipping rocks at a landscaper who is filling his lawnmower with gasoline until he tells them to fucking beat it. But Samantha, listen, she's a MILF. She's got a bit higher priorities. She doesn't really tell her kids to knock it off. She just gives them money to go to the arcade while she's getting her hair cut. And they're old enough. I would say they're like 7 and 9 or like 8 and 10. So like old enough that like the arcade's on the block, you could give them money to go for 45 minutes, right?
Yeah.
So they run off. When she goes inside, however, the receptionist says, oh, I'm sorry. Richard's out today. We emailed you. Somebody got killed on his block. And she's like, why? She's like, yeah, apparently this guy got dragged down the street on fire and then his truck exploded.
Jesus.
And Samantha says, oh my God, is someone else available? Which again, I think is very funny. The receptionist says, let me find out. Samantha begs her, like, please, this is the only time I get my hair cut. I'll take anybody. She says, okay, we only have one available hairstylist, and it's a goth named Dee Dee, who's kind of pissed that she has to do this basic woman's hair. Yeah. But again, paychecks
are, you know,
cash is cash. We see Dee Dee put on the salon cloak way too tight on Samantha. Ugh. And then jacks her chair up, and then the chair drops suddenly. And I was like, oh, that's kind of mean. She's like, I'm really sorry. I asked them to fix my chair like 1,000 times.
Okay.
Samantha's like, it's totally fine. And fortunately, we do know that having scissors near this woman's face and suddenly her chair dropping.
Yeah. Well, not good.
Someone's about to lose an eye at best, her life at worst. And she's getting the full works, which I love. I've never had this done before, but she's getting her hair cut while also a pedicurist is giving her a pedicure.
I would like that.
I was like, that's the way to go. And we see Dee Dee is doing Samantha's highlights, which again, it is a lot of trust to go to someone new.
Yeah.
Because I've had my hair fucked up so many times throughout my life, and it's so expensive, so much money. All of a sudden, we see the receptionist, whose name is Cheyenne. We see her sweeping up the hair and then leaning her broom against sort of the shelves of, you know, products that are available. And knocks over a bottle of product and a squirt of body butter ends up on the floor. Uh-oh.
No, boy.
Samantha asks for water. Cheyenne retrieves it and spills water, setting it down next to Dee Dee's flat iron, which is plugged into the wall. And it was 2009, so a lot of flat ironing going on. And then if that wasn't enough, we see the ceiling fan is just barely bolted to the ceiling by screws that are, of course, coming slowly undone. Just then, Dee Dee begins to cut Samantha's bangs.
Oh, boy. Not bangs.
Just as outside on the lawn, the lawnscaper starts driving his ride-on mower through the grass. We see her glass of water and the beads of water pooling on the outside.
Yeah.
They're forming a thin layer of water, and they're causing a can of hairspray to slowly drift across Dee Dee's sort of a little area. Oh, and unfortunately, the can of hairspray drifts between the open prongs of the flat iron.
Oh my God.
So now we see the can of hairspray slowly heating up. Samantha's chair suddenly drops again. Luckily, Dee Dee's scissors narrowly avoid her eye. She apologizes profusely. Just then, the boys run in, slushies and Twizzlers in hand, and we see them slip on the body butter just as the can of hairspray explodes, hitting the overhead fan, which falls on the ground, hurting no one. But still, very startling.
Still, there's been an explosion indoors.
Needless to say.
Of an aerosol can.
Yeah. Sarah's like, you know what? I think we're good. I'm going to go ahead and settle up. She pays. She loves her highlight. She tells Dee Dee, you did a great job, even though you're goth. Allison, Samantha.
Even goths can do highlights.
Samantha opens. If you're a goth listening, we know you can do hair, obviously.
We know you can do highlights.
Samantha settles up and she opens the front door. The boys are obviously acting insane because now they are hyped up on sugar. And she turns and she says, you better behave. I've got my eye on you. Allison, she turns to walk through the doorway just as the lawnmower runs over one of the rocks her sons was throwing. And it picks up the rock and it flings it across the street and into Samantha's eye socket, not just exploding her eyeball, but rocketing through the back of her skull and shattering the glass of the door behind her.
It's like getting shot with a bullet.
Needless to say, Samantha is dead. MILF down.
MILF down.
The next day, Nick and Lori have Hunt and Janet read the newspaper. The article reading, Lakeview woman, local MILF, in tragic accident at local beauty salon. Hunt basically is like, damn, and she was such a fucking hot MILF. R.I.P.
Yeah, what a loss.
R.I.P. to the MILFs of the world. Nick tries to tell him about his prophetic dreams, and Lori is on board and is like, here's all this research we did about premonitions online. So we're Googling. We discovered other scenarios in which people survived a tragedy and then they died in the order that they should have died in the first place. And Jan says,
do they reference the events of the other movies, or is it never really brought up?
Not at this juncture. Janet says, well, we all died in your premonition, so does that mean we're all going to die? Nick says, well, it looks like there are ways around it. If somebody intervenes in your death, it can stop it. Others say it just changes the batting order. Hunt says, this is some spooky internet bullshit babble. I don't believe any of this. Janet, of course, believes it and freaks out. She's like, I don't think I can hear this. I don't know what to do with this. And she storms out. Hunt says,
that would be like, I don't know what to do
with this. What do you want me to do with this?
Like, I can't. If I'm not having the premonition. Like,
and what the franchise presupposes is that you could die anywhere. You could be sitting at home and car explode. Like, there's just no way you could choke to death on a raisin. Like, there's just no way to prevent it. So the burden of considering it, Janet freaks out and leaves. She just can't hear it right now. Hunt says, God, she used to be uptight and normal. Now she's uptight and insane. Nick points out, you know, she did watch people die in front of her, so maybe we could be sensitive. Hunt's like, I don't know if I can. I've never tried. I'm going to try to get laid. I'm out of here. And then he says, well, if I happen to bump into Janet, I will check on her, okay? He leaves, and Nick and Lori talk, and Nick's like, well, maybe we are delusional. I mean, is there a chance that we're just, like, trying to find reason, and, like, we're just trying to create a pattern, but, like, these are just kind of random deaths that are unrelated? And Lori says, I hope so. Allison, Nick immediately has another vision. We see a blowtorch, a coil of wire, a red-hot projectile, and again, the words, it's coming. Nick comes to and he says, I think that we can try to stop this. Lori's like, how? He says, I think we have to go to the racetrack. I need to go there and try to remember the order in which people died. Right.
Something.
So, okay, very smart. Okay, so if that's it, then how can we remember from his vision? It's been a minute. A lot of stuff's happening.
Yeah.
They go at night. Bizarre choice. Lori is terrified. She's like, this place is haunted. I said, I'm sorry, but I think this will work.
Literally, it's a place of death at this point.
Allison, Nick goes through the order of death. Nadia, tired of the head. Then the racist and his racist wife. Then the MILF with her family. Lori begs to leave. And I guess what I think, the kids didn't die. Okay, so I guess we're to think just the MILF died. I accept it.
Okay.
Lori's begging to leave, like, I can't be here. Allison, Nick can't remember who dies next. A hand grabs his shoulder. It's George, the security guard.
Yeah.
And he says, you better have a damn good reason to be here in the middle of the night. They fill George in. And he's like, I think this is insane. But if you're trying to remember the order, like if you're trying to remember who was sitting around you, we have security footage.
Okay.
Helpful. So they go and they look through. Exactly. So it's like, okay, jog your memory of who was even sitting around there. We then look at the tape and he remembers Andy the mechanic, who's the boyfriend of Nadia, the decapitated lady. Andy the mechanic is next. And then Hunt and Janet, and then George, Lori, and Nick. He says, if we can save the mechanic, maybe that'll break the chain and save the rest of us. Lori said, well, we don't know his name. He says, well, luckily we know where he works because on the back of his jacket, it says Grand State Customs.
Okay.
They go to his mechanic shop. Allison, it's just really funny where it's like, Nick is just looking at all like flammable, like yes. tanks of gas, butane lighters, just like gasoline, just everything could explode at any point in time. Nick and Lori take Andy out, sort of near a chain link fence. They say, hey, we think you're going to die next. He's trying to hear them out, but he's like, look, I'm just trying to get my life together. Nadia's death destroyed me. Like, seeing her die in front of me has broken me. I just don't know if I could, like, go along with this, right? George is there, and George is open up and says, I know how you feel. My wife and my child died in a car accident, and it was my fault. I was drunk, and I was driving. Oof. And I was basically dead inside, and I kind of gave up, and I just, like, fell into my alcoholism until I realized, like, if I don't live, I'm actually desecrating their memory. Right. So now I live every day for them. And it's like, damn, George. Okay.
It's a lot.
Andy, and then Andy says, and this is the other part, where it's like, look, here's the thing. I'm around dangerous equipment all the time. This is my fucking job. If I was going to die, wouldn't have I have already died? Allison, inside the mechanic shop behind them, one of his coworkers spits chew into a cup, puts the cup on a fan. Of course, the constantly rattling fans, the real enemy in the Final Destination films. The cup falls, bada bing, bada boom.
Here we go.
A car slides off the lift. It hurtles towards Andy, the mechanic, and
is
about to
crush
him. Wait, how
does it slide off the lift? Like, what causes that?
Basically, the cup falls onto a fan. The fan falls onto a lever.
Oh, okay. So it hits something.
Yes, okay. There's a Rube Goldberg. It just knocks into the lift. The lift lowers. The car slides off and hurtles towards Andy, is about to crush him against the chain link fence. Luckily, it's attached to a big coil of like wire or chain. Mm-hmm. So it stops short. So like he has like inches to spare, inches from crushing him against the fence. He says, oh, my God. Well, I mean, guess it's not my time to die. Unfortunately, Allison, the end of the spool holding the chain, the weight of the car yanks the metal spool off its stand.
Uh-huh.
The spool slams into a tank of pressurized gas.
Of course.
Which flies like a rocket out the door and directly into Andy the mechanic's chest cavity, slamming him against the chain link fence so hard that we see diamonds of his flesh slide through and fall through the links to the other side. Needless to say, Andy the mechanic is dead. Ooh. George immediately says, we have to tell your friends immediately. Yes. We just have to, like, they just have to be aware. But Nick doesn't know who died next, Janet or Hunt.
It doesn't matter.
Exactly. And there's three of you. So George and Lori are going to hunt down Janet, and Nick will find Hunt and just say, you two are next, right? Hunt is at the country club where he's having full-on sex at like 2 p.m. in one of those like little cabanas. But this isn't like a discreet area. This is just near like a country club pool filled with children and families. No. He's just fucking some lady. And because Hunt is a piece of shit, as soon as he comes, he basically like rolls the woman off of him.
Cool.
Meanwhile, we see Janet picking up her dry cleaning and give a homeless man a handful of change. And he's sort of going through. He's like, ugh, a penny? And he throws the penny into the road. Which, by the way, did you see that they're going to stop production on pennies?
I did see. The penny is the whatever's... I forget what the deadline is, but it's basically like whatever pennies exist are the pennies that exist, but they're phasing them out of production.
Yeah, the U.S. Treasury just ordered their last shipment of penny blanks. And so basically, like, when those are gone, the penny, they will not be making any more pennies, which is bizarre. I don't know. It's just a weird thing to think about.
And it's weird to think, like, there are so many out there because it's not like they get destroyed,
That's
I
true.
Don't think. So, like, they won't stop existing. There are, I would assume, billions of pennies in circulation. Millions, at least.
And I do feel like we do, I mean, inflation in the modern world, I guess we have less and less need for a penny versus in the past when a penny, you know, could potentially buy something in of itself.
Right. Or a couple of them could, like, you know, be something. But yeah, wild.
Allison, Janet gets into her car to find a huge pigeon dump, just like the biggest, fattest pigeon just shitting all over her windshield. And she tries to clean it off, but it just smears around. She's like, oh, brother.
Of course.
We then see her sunroof jams open and she's able to get it closed, but it's like everything's going wrong, of course, with her day. Nick is frantically trying to call Hunt. No answer, because again, he's fucking. And he stops at a stoplight and he sees a sign that says Clear Rivers Water. And that sends him into a vision. Clear Rivers, of course, being the character's name. One of the survivors of the first film, not so much a survivor of the second film. Seeing this name sends Nick into a vision. He sees a penny, some sort of gauge, a car wash, a short circuit, an alarm, and water dumping from the ceiling.
Oh, no.
And then we see blood and water rushing up a pipe. But the thing is, two people are about to die. So it's like, which images from which death? Are they all from one death? Would even knowing that be able to prevent it? But at least he knows, he leaves Hunt a voicemail and says, whatever you do, don't go near water. Of course, we see Hunt is at the pool. So again, good warning, Hunt is just too busy fucking and sucking. He doesn't get the voicemail. We then see some snot-nosed kid sprays him with a water gun. He rips the water gun out of the kid's hand. It's basically a water bazooka, like it's gigantic. And of course, the water fucks up Hunt's phone, which shuts off. So now he couldn't even listen to his voicemails if he wanted to. And in his anger, he throws the water machine gun over a fence and it hits the mechanism that activates the pool's drain at the bottom of the pool. And we see the drainage hole open up and slowly start draining the pool, which is filled with dozens of people.
Yeah.
Dozens of children. So I was like, is this going to be a mass death in the pool? Are they all going to get sucked down there? Meanwhile, Allison, unfortunately, speaking of water, Janet is trying to pay to go into a car wash. And we see her drop a coin into a sewer grate, the dropping coin from Nick's vision. Fortunately, she answers the phone. It's Lori. But before Lori can even get a word out, she says, I'm going to a car wash. I'll call you back in 5. And she just she just hangs up the phone to close her sunroof because she's already going in. Unfortunately, Allison, as soon as Janet starts going through the car wash, we see water get inside a circuit breaker, which shorts out, and her car is stopped in the middle of the whirring, scrubbing columns. Lori calls again, and Janet answers, and Lori says, please, Nick just called me, and he said, stay away from water. Of course, Janet's looking around like, oh, fuck. The call drops, Allison. She has no signal, so she couldn't call 911 or anything like that. And when she tries to drive forward, her sunroof opens, and a pipe bursts directly above her car and slowly starts filling her car with water. She tries to open the doors. She cannot get them open. Allison.
Girl, get out the sunroof.
Who will survive this film? I will add this, is a sunroof is only open enough that she could sort of get her head through. It's not big enough to crawl out. So it's jammed halfway open. Otherwise, you're right, just scramble out.
Yeah.
So Allison, who will survive this film?
Survive. I think just our couple that's at the center and the security guard. I think, well, wait, maybe the girl dies. I think that obviously, like, the two impending deaths are going to continue on. No one's going to be able to intervene.
Janet. Again, we're just now in the promise of the premise. You know, that we're just in the fun of the film. And Janet and Hunt, I'm sorry, your bodies have been offered up to the body count. And I think, again, we've seen enough where it really could be any of them, right? Like, I feel like this part of the fun of these movies is the chaos of, will any of the main characters survive? Will a subsidiary character survive? And unfortunately, Janet and Hunt, they weren't warned in the nick of time. I mean, I guess technically Janet was, but she didn't get the memo.
But what could she do? Yeah, she wasn't really because she was already in. I do think our security guard and Nick and his girlfriend were survived.
Okay, great.
Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Allison, I will say the pipe dumping water into your car while you're frantically screaming and trying to open the doors and you can't get it open is scary.
No.
It's similar like if you're
that's terrifying.
If your car goes into a lake or a body of water, that's horrifying. I will say also, I was in somebody's car yesterday and it's a new car, and I was in the back seat and I went to get out and they couldn't figure out how to undo the child locks. And so somebody had to get out and open the door to let me out. And I was like, don't drive near any bodies of water until you figure out why that's happening. That's terrifying.
Yikes.
George is driving and he speeds down the street as he and Lori try to figure out what car wash would Janet be at. So she at least says, I'm going to the car wash. They're like, okay, where the fuck, which one isn't? Allison, we cut back to Janet. She's in chest high water. Like her head is like pressed up against the sunroof screaming.
No.
Even worse, Hunt is totally safe. He's on the side of the pool. He's lounging in a pool chair, ogling the hotties.
That sucks.
Allison, a golf ball flies off the green and knocks Hunt's drink out of his hand, and it causes him to drop a quarter. The quarter rolls into the pool, and Hunt is such a fucking cheapskate. We then see what I think is probably the stupidest death of this franchise so far. It is gruesome, but it's like this bastard jumps in for this quarter.
Chasing a quarter.
He swims.
You're at a country club.
He swims down to the bottom of the pool. Allison, he turns. No. He feels himself being dragged down, and he turns, and unfortunately his ass gets sucked to the drainage hole.
Yeah, that old
story. Chestnut, that old wives' tale, urban legend. Meanwhile, poor Janet is able to open the sunroof enough to put her head out. She cannot get her shoulders out, and then it malfunctions and it closes against her throat. So water is dumping on her. The cab of her car is essentially full of water. She is screaming, which is genuinely terrifying.
Also, where are the people that are like running? That's what I hate about those automatic car washes. I'm like,
that's
no
true.
One's watching this.
Exactly. Right. If somebody was next door or like in a booth somewhere, they would at least hear her horrified screams.
Yeah. Or see that it's like stuck or like that a pipe is like, but like you would know. Yeah. I would think
there
if you were
a sensor, like an alarm something. Would go off with the pipe burst or something like this was happening. Allison, just as her car fills with water and she begins to drown in this car wash, another car rams into the back of hers, pushing her forward. So at least the pipe is not dumping on her. It is Lori and George. They have located the car wash. They are doing the right thing, smashing her car forward. Lori jumps out, is able to open the door and pull Janet free before the pipe collapses on her car. Jeez. Like the whole piping system collapses, crushes her car, which would have killed her regardless. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the pressure of the draining pool does suck Hunt's intestines out his ass. We don't see it, but we know it's happening. Yeah. Out his ass, and sends them exploding out the top of the pressure gauge on the pool deck, all over the place.
So that's
We see the gauge explode, and we see viscera and water explode just as Nick arrives, and we see the quarter that Hunt was looking for fall to the ground. So unfortunately, that is a feature wrap on Hunt.
Yeah, well,
We knew.
Lori and George talk while Janet talks to a tow truck driver because her car is undrivable now, obviously.
Obviously.
And unfortunately, George is sort of like the mother in Final Destination 2. He's like, I will try to help you, but my entire family is dead. So if I'm supposed to die, I'm kind of at peace with it. Like, I kind of just want to, like, just stay at home and, like, go however I'm going to go, because I kind of don't have anything keeping me here. However, Lori and Nick do. So Lori and Nick try to death-proof their house. They're literally, like, wrapping their knives up together in tape. Like, they're trying to, like, baby-proof their entire house.
And it's like, how long can you live like that, though?
Not very long. And so they're thinking, because Lori and George intervene, Janet has been skipped. Okay. So Lori says, if George dies, I'm next. So please, when that time comes, if George dies, please keep your distance and keep working. Promise me you'll still try to save yourself. Don't give up like George. I can't let you give up on being alive. Nick says, I'm not going to do that. And you are not going to die. We are in this together. Allison, he reaches for her and he spills her coffee on the newspaper. And when they look, the only words that aren't covered in coffee, you know, sort of like it is built a message in the dry sections. It says, through action, they were saved.
Right.
Which, again, to me, it invites a lot of questions about, like, so the universe could speak English and, like, can, like, try to give them, like, written instructions. Okay. But I guess it has been saying it's coming. So, again, like, we have seen a couple times. It didn't really help. But, like, it is both warning them and killing them at the same time. Right?
Yeah. Right. I'm like, well, what's the goal here? What are the rules? And also, like,
we did have, in Final Destination 3, the emo couple does sort of talk about, well, if death is taking action, you can take an equal reaction. Like, you're allowed to act on death. Mm-hmm. So I think we're sort of using the idea, like, well, maybe no one else has to die. Let's go talk to George. Unfortunately, Allison, they arrive at George's house to find the door unlocked. And he calls out and he says, we think that saving Janet not just saved her, but broke the chain. And we want to talk to you about it. We see George's phone, a glass of sherry, so he's off the wagon, and a coin. And we hear a noise in the bedroom, the sound of a chair falling over.
Oh, no.
They burst into his bedroom, and George has hung himself.
Yeah.
But when they, obviously they're horrified, he gasps awake, and the rope gives, and he falls. And he's still alive. And they're like, George, what the fuck are you doing? He's like, I have been trying to kill myself all day. I swallowed a bottle of pills, and I threw it up. I tried to put the car in my garage. It stalled out.
Now's not your time.
And Lori says, okay, that makes sense. Right. And she says, we think that Janet must have broken the chain because you're next. So if you can't die, it's not your time. Then, like, maybe it's over. And George says, oh, my God, I can't believe it. Let's break out a bottle of champagne. Allison, they all toast. Of course, they don't know that we're still in the third act of this film. We have plenty of time left. And they all talk about, what will you do with your second chance? And Lori says, oh, I really want to travel. I've always wanted to travel. Like, that's what, you know, I really want to do that. And Nick says, I don't know what I'm going to do, but whatever I do, I won't take a single day for granted. George says, that's what I'm talking about. And he says, let me go get the cookies. Allison, life is for the living. As of right now, it does seem like saving Janet has broken the chain, because a couple days go by, they're all still alive. Lori and Nick say, we're fucking going on a trip. They book a trip to Amsterdam, and they're going right now because they're like, fuck it, let's just go. So we see them packing. We see Lori has to go pick up some traveler's checks. And she says, well, me and Janet are going to see the movie that she wanted to see that day instead of going to the McKinley Raceway, Love Lays Dying. And I love a movie inside a movie. I always think that's fun. And she says, well, we're seeing it in 3D. Janet loves 3D movies. I think they're kind of stupid. And he says, yeah, that sounds like it sucks, but don't worry. I'll be already unpacked by the time you're back. So you guys see the movie. I'm going to finish up. And then we're going to fucking Amsterdam. Life is for the living. Allison, he hangs up and he sees that a magazine has fallen. And we see a photo of a man's hand reaching out of the water. And he is suddenly sent into a vision. We see a gas pipe, a snake wrapped around a staff, and then an explosion and blood. Allison, he looks at the TV at a news report. It turns out there were other survivors, including the guy in the cowboy hat who sat in front of Lori, who he saw die in the premonition. He didn't die. he survived and he was caught in the rubble for days.
They forgot about, like, they forgot about
him. Yes, they weren't factoring him in because they thought he had died. They just thought he was a regular victim, right? Yeah. He is a survivor and was finally saved by the rubble and lived. He's in the hospital. And Nick says, fuck, we have to talk to this guy. Because he, if there's another survivor, then we don't actually know what the order is.
What order?
He could be next.
Fuck.
Nick jumps the car. He calls George. How fast can you get to the hospital? Unfortunately, Allison, we see an elderly racist man berating an Asian American nurse who's about to put him like in a medical bath. You ever see it's like a big steel bathtub? This guy's very elderly. He's going to put him in there. And he gets called out of the room and he doesn't shut the tub faucet off. And slowly the tub starts to fill and overflow. And the elderly man's like calling for help. Yeah. Nobody is paying attention. They've just kind of left him there. Allison, we see the man in the cowboy hat wake up in a hospital bed, bloody but still alive. Unfortunately, Allison, the second he wakes up, he feels sort of drops of water falling on his face. And he looks up into the ceiling and we see the water from the tub is already starting to seep through the floor directly over the cowboy's hospital bed. George meets up with Nick and Nick explains, we intervened in his death. He was supposed to sit in front of us, die. We interacted with him and said, he's like, oh, do you want to move down? Because he moved down because of us. And George is like, okay, so if he dies, does that mean I'm next? And Nick's like, I think so. But again, at this point, it's like, it could mean anything.
I don't know. Yeah.
But also, George is now invested in living. He's like, okay, then we have to intervene and prevent his death again. Okay. We have to break it, you know? Allison, they rush into the hospital. They open the cowboy's room door just in time to see this gigantic steel bathtub crash through the ceiling and crush the cowboy to death. Uh-oh. It seems like the universe is still afoot.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Lori and Janet are at the mall, gigantic mall, to see Lovelace die. And which in my mind is, I just assume stars Kristen Stewart.
I was just thinking that it would be her.
And so also the poster is just a sideways eye, which does look vaginal. So every time you say Lovelace die, you could also in your mind just make it Lovelace bleeding. I think that's totally fine.
Yeah. Oh, that's why we're thinking that. Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, why am I imagining that that's a real movie that Kristen Stewart is in? But it's because it's so close to that title.
Allison, Lori and Janet go to buy tickets and we see that they are constructing a whole other wing of the mall. And so we see a crane lifting a gigantic new air conditioning block onto the roof over the skylight of the mall. Janet sees it and says, great. I mean, genius. Someone could be killed if that fell. Allison, they're bumped by a remote control race car. It's like one of those like stands where they're like driving around, like come over and buy these race cars.
Yeah.
And Lori starts to get a bad feeling, but they already bought tickets. So Nick and George walk out of the hospital and George says, I'm having this weird feeling of deja vu. And it's weird because my wife always said deja vu. Allison, George is creamed by an ambulance speeding into the parking lot killed.
So we're back on schedule.
Yeah. So George is now killed. And on the side of the ambulance is a snake wrapped around a staff. Again, the medical symbol from Nick's vision. Back at the mall, Lori and Janet go into the movie theater. And one of the other movies, like I love like the fake posters. Yes. There, I remember in Maxine, there were some good ones. And one of them is a movie and the title is Saving Little Christina. And it's Christina with a K, which for some reason seemed crazier. Sure. Allison, we see a construction worker walk through a door into the new wing of the mall they are building, and which is what the new air conditioning block is for. Allison, he walks through there. We're talking nail guns. We're talking drills. We're talking electrical saws. We're talking union mandated breaks. We see that Lori bought a new pair of sneakers for her trip, like walking shoes. Lori shows off her new pair of sneakers that she got for the trip. Unfortunately, when they get on the escalator, because it's like this is like the biggest mall I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. So there's like multi-floor, it's like sort of like the AMC in Times Square where there's like escalators in the movie theater, right? Allison, they get on the escalator and her shoelace gets caught in the escalator. And I was ready.
Yeah.
But fortunately, when they get to the top, she's able to just yank her shoe free. And I will say,
just take the shoe off, girl.
And I would say at this juncture, I was like, I really could have used that.
Yeah.
Like, it's been a minute. Yeah. I did like the cowboy getting squished, but I think we're ready to sort of wrap this bad boy up. Allison, the union guys, take a break. The construction workers, 15 minutes. One of them, unfortunately, has left his safety goggles on a surface. The sun passes through the safety goggles, and the magnified beam of light starts a small fire in a little pile of sawdust from when they were sawing wood. Nick, now alone, screeches up to the mall and does that classic movie thing where he just like jumps out of his truck, leaves it parked in front of the mall on the street, and runs inside. He sees an ad for Love Lies Dying, and he then sees another vision. Of course, you know it's linked. It's a Rube Goldberg catastrophe that starts in the construction area and leads to an explosion that blows up Lori and Janet's theater. And we see the screen of their theater explode inward. Mm. Of course, now we're seeing the disaster. All the pieces, while he's running through the mall, start to put together. We see there's an open window in the construction area. The wind blows a tarp onto a cart, which knocks over a container of course, some sort of flammable liquid, as you'd have in a construction zone.
All that's on a construction site is flammable liquids.
Which creates a deadly stream over to barrels and barrels. It just says a caution flammable. Yes, they're like black, like oil barrels or something.
Oil drums
just
full of
up.
Flammable materials exactly. that they just keep around. Is, what could that possibly be for?
And for all I know, that is what construction is. In the theater, we see Janet and Lori. They put on their 3D glasses, as is, of course, they're seeing a 3D movie. We're watching a 3D movie. Yes. Fun.
Yes, it's very fun.
She then sees, as we've seen in the franchise, Lori starts to see like things that are sparking deja vu. He sees there's a black theater attendant telling this angry white guy to put his feet down. She sees on the side of Janet's popcorn bucket. They shouldn't, but there's advertisement. I'm like, oh, why don't they advertise on popcorn buckets? I don't want them to. It just occurred to me.
Right.
I guess they do for like Wicked and stuff. Like they'll have like branded stuff.
They do like thematic popcorn buckets for movies. Yeah. But only specific ones, and it just creates more garbage.
We see on the side of the pocket an ad for another movie, Till Death Do We Part. Again, she started to be like, I'm getting the feeling.
Oh.
Allison, unfortunately, in the construction zone, the little sawdust fire meets up with the growing chemical spill. And now we just started to have some smoldering. We have some smoke.
Yes, of course.
He runs in to the theater. I don't even know. I think he like left the turnstile. He runs in. There's a dozen theaters showing Lovelace Dying because it's a huge movie. The fires, meanwhile, he's like running through the theaters. He keeps running into theaters and just screaming Lori, and everyone's like, get out of here. Allison, the fire is growing in the new wing, and he runs into the final theater, and just as he does, he sees the explosion he saw in this vision, but it was just in the movie. So who donged this? No, but there is an explosion immediately before the actual explosion.
Yes.
He runs into a theater. It's not the right theater. Lori tells Janet, I have a bad feeling. It's like at the racetrack. I think something is going to go wrong. Janet's like, bitch, grow up. Everything's fine. Just because all those people died and I almost drowned in a car wash doesn't mean I'm going to miss this movie. Everyone's talking about it. Nick finally makes it to theater 13. He runs in and he screams Lori. And as soon as she hears that, she's like, we got to get out of here. So she leaps up. They demand Janet leave with them. She says, no, I was never supposed to be at that fucking stupid racetrack. I was supposed to be seeing this movie. Allison, the movie explosion happens in the film, and then an actual explosion sending a jagged piece of metal flying through the air and, of course, pinning Janet through her torso to her movie seat. And unfortunately, then the mall just absolutely fucking goes up in explosions and flame. It's mass hysteria. Everyone's running out of the movie theater. Fire everywhere. Allison, Nick, and Lori run to the escalator. Thank God we're getting the escalator moment. They start to run down it, which it stops. They're just using it as stairs. Unfortunately, another huge explosion destabilizes and the stairs start breaking away. So like the top still has essentially stairs and the rest falls away, revealing the horrible mangler insides of the escalator, which begins to churn, drawing them down into the metal. And there's nothing Nick could do. As they reach the bottom of the escalator, as Lori's foot is dragged into the mechanism and her feet and legs are ground into hamburger meat. While she is slowly dragged, screaming to her terrible death inside the machine, Allison, Nick gasps awake. Luckily, it was all a premonition, which I love. Unfortunately, he and George are outside the hospital, and just as he turns to scream for George to stop and not step out into the road, George does. He's still killed by the ambulance. Because that's the thing. I'm like, okay, so is this in this movie, can you not prevent these deaths? Right. Is that what we're sort of thinking? Like, but I guess that is sort of the moral of most of the movies. Is like, yeah, there's nothing
these
you can
things
do.
Are like, it's a mechanism that's already in action.
And so Nick, obviously, like, he kind of knows that, but he has to try because he loves Lori. And Janet is a friend, but he doesn't want her to blow up in a movie theater. Allison, same thing. He speeds the mall. He leaps out, leaves his fucking car, throws his car keys on the goddamn ground, and runs into the movie theater. This time, though, he runs through the theater into the construction wing. And he pulls the fire alarm, which is not connected yet. That's some sort of violation. That is some sort of code violation. But there is a fire extinguisher. He tries to put out the small fire. He runs out of extinguisher juice. So now there's a full like sawdust fire with this chemical that's on the ground growing. There's smoke billowing. He tries to stomp the flames out. Unfortunately, as Nick is stomping, we see one little ember fly up and fly to a nearby table, which also has
tons
a
of
separate
sawdust piles.
Sawdust pile across the room. And he turns to see that flames leap to life. So basically, like, him stomping sent embers all over the place. Everything is flammable. Allison, he turns, he sees the flames grow on this table. The table falls. The nail gun on the table hits the ground and starts shooting nails. And these are huge construction nails, right?
No.
And they end up shooting through Nick's arm and pin him to a concrete pillar. Unfortunately, Allison, the nails also punch holes in, again, the dozen barrels of flammable liquids. You hate to see it. And boy, is Nick in a pickle now. And I remember seeing this, like, what the fuck is he supposed to do? He's pinned. He literally can't escape. He can't reach anything. He can't put the fires out. So he reaches down and he grabs, like, this really long, like, 12-foot piece of wood, like a 2x4. It's already on fire, but he grabs it and he lifts the fire end up towards the sprinklers, because God help him if the sprinklers are connected.
If those are connected.
Allison, and we see the liquid, liquid from the drooling barrels, which now have nail holes. Their liquid is inching towards the fire.
No.
And once they ignite, well, the whole thing is over. Allison, the liquid begins to ignite. And the sprinklers go off, putting out the fire just as the flame reaches the barrels. And we see the movie explosion in the movie, sans actual flames. Just... He did it. He intervened.
Wow. He's still stuck to a pillar.
Yes. Allison, 2 weeks later, Nick, we see his arm is in a cast. He's walking up to their terrible coffee shop, and we see the name of it is Death by Caffeine. And as he walks by, he sees like a there's scaffolding, like construction scaffolding across the street. And he says to the construction worker, you should check that. And we see one of the legs of the scaffolding is wobbly. And the man's like, oh, thank God. Thank you for telling me. And Nick holds up his cast. He says, hey, it pays to be safe. Allison, he walks over to the coffee shop. And we see Janet and Lori are hanging out. They laugh. He gets like a gigantic frappuccino. And he's like, whatever. I mean, I'm living life. And then he takes a sip. He's like, oh, this is actually too much.
Yeah.
We see a man in the coffee shop recognize Nick. And he says, oh, my God, you're the guy who stopped the fire at the mall. So not like not only did he do it, everyone now knows that he is a hero.
Yes.
And he says, you know, you saved a lot of lives. And Nick says, I honestly think I was just at the right place at the right time. And the guy says, hey, sometimes that's all it takes. Allison, Nick, Lori, and Janet get a table next to the huge picture window through which we can see the construction workers working. And we see the girls, they're gabbing. They're talking about Amsterdam, everywhere they're going to go. And we see pinned to the bulletin board is a brochure for the Country Club pool. And then we see someone reading a magazine. On the back cover, it's an ad for Love Lies Dying, starring Loretta Kemsky and Brett Bowden. I just love the name of, like, I was like, sure. Allison on the TV, he sees NASCAR and he gets the feeling again. And he looks down and the words scrawled on the table in front of them, it's not, we see it's coming, has been scratched out. And as he lowers his arm, he sees another phrase. And we don't even see the whole phrase, which I love. But the phrase is that he sees written on the table. It's here. And Laurie says, Space Cadet, hello. And he looks up, he says, wait a minute, what if we didn't change anything? What if us being here was the plan from the beginning? And the girl's like, bitch, what are you talking about? It's over. It's been 2 weeks. Allison, outside.
It's never over.
As they talk, we see the construction scaffolding collapse into the street. And a truck veers not to run over all the construction workers. And it hurtles towards death by caffeine. And we see it smash through the picture window. And the second it smashes into the window, we cut to the X-ray 3D skeleton that we saw in the credit sequence. And we see the 3D skeletons of our three survivors get mowed down by this fucking semi. We see Janet's body fucking pulverized as it just runs over her. We yeah. see Lori's head twist. It breaks Lori's neck and her jaw shears off. And it's and the truck slams Nick against the wall, killing him. The final destination. And then we just get like the rest of the credits. It's just more fun deaths from the movie that we're seeing in 3D, which I really did enjoy.
Yeah, that's fun.
Allison, what are some fatal mistakes that may have been made in The Final Destination?
Fatal mistakes.
I mean, again, the thing with this franchise is like there is really nothing you can do. It seems like I guess if anything, like the overconfidence of like we did it, we beat it, okay, just like live your life. But even that, like they were like, what are you not gonna go get coffee? Like what at what point are you not just like locked in a padded cell drinking your food? Just avoiding all possible prospects of danger. Like you can't. So I don't know. I think they all did their best trying to warn people but death's coming for everyone. Like
that's the thing about these movies is these movies are for us, right? This is for us to panic and look for all the clues, the penny drop and the machine whirl. They are caught in the mechanism. They are being dragged into the escalator. There's nothing they can do. So they could try their best, and I think everyone did, except for Carter the racist. He did the worst he could do, and he did pay a price
for it. Don't be racist. Is as always a lesson that maybe this isn't really teaching us, but a nice reminder.
And other than that, I mean, our main characters, they really tried and they communicated, they shared their thoughts and feelings and theses about what could be happening. And that is unfortunately all you could do if you're in a Final Destination movie. And then Allison, where would you place The Final Destination on the spooky scale?
Spooky scale.
I think for me this is a 4. You kind of know what these movies are at this point. I will say like some of like the car wash near death scene was very scary and realistic. I feel like what's scary about these movies is like those even though they're like complicated things that lead to it, the actual deaths themselves are like realistic things that could happen. Like you could drown in your car. Like you could get stuck to a drain in a pool. Like you could get run over by a car. Those are all like real things. So I think like the deaths themselves are scary to me, but the rules of the movies are not so scary to me. Yeah. What about you?
I'm going to give it a 2.
Yeah.
Cause I agree. Like there are certain moments that were affecting, but these movies are just fun.
Yeah.
And they're sort of, they're for us to scream, oh no, watch out from the audience.
Yes.
And that in of itself is like, these are movies I'm excited to see, Final Destination Bloodlines in the theater.
Yeah, that'll
I think
be
that's
fun.
Exactly what these are built for, but in terms of being scary, no. So if you're someone who, can handle a little bit of gore but not like actually being scared, you could watch
these are pretty fun.
I just know like some people it's like you could watch something as long as you're not actually ever supposed to be scared, and I think these pretty much, because it is more of like it's more of a mystery, we're solving it, you're not gonna feel scared watching these.
And more like how is it gonna happen, not is it gonna happen.
Exactly. All right, great. Well, we hope you enjoyed this, you guys. I've really been enjoying the franchise.
Yeah, what a fun month.
And we hope that you are as well. Look, I mean, if someone starts having prophetic visions, just start telling everybody. Yeah. Just tell everybody.
Get that out there.
unburden yourself. And in the meantime, until next week, please
keep it spooky. Bye.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Ruin Podcast, or join us at patreon.com/ruin podcast for exclusive episodes and video content. Ruin is a Radio Point production with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, Dan Powell, and Houston Snyder.
Recorded and edited by Sage Spielman.
Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.